Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And a good evening to you, Ben, and greetings, Earthlings.
Greetings, fellow Earthlings, indeed. And if you'd like to write to us any questions, comments, queries you would have, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And of course, we're always here live on the internet on the Dublin cityfm.ie stream, and also as a podcast. Lots to get through, John.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about the Inland Space Mission later, and we'll get to E.T. Is he out there? Better ways of finding him, perhaps, and maybe a little bit dark matter and dark stars, but we will start with what to see in the sky.
Now, the International Space Station, if you're a fan of following it up through the evening skies, it came into our skies in July the 9th, just gone past. This is about 9 days ago, and will be around until July the 28th. I think the pass for tonight, 10:58, would I be right in saying that, Ben? And then again at 11:45, so we've two. And a maximum altitude of 66 degrees, so we'll see what that's. So it's a magnitude of -3.8, so it's good and bright. So it looks like an aeroplane, really, doesn't it? Flaking through the sky without the flashing lights. So just keep that in mind.
I better check that time.
That's,
one of those times is right.
We can do a quick check now in a minute just in case we've made a slight error, which is most unlike us. Just keep a note until July the 28th in our evening skies. Now let's go quickly around the planets just at the moment. Now, things are changing rapidly. And Mercury is in deep in the glow of sunset to the lower right of brighter Venus. Start looking for them about 20 minutes just after sunset. And binoculars do help. Mercury is 20 degrees from Venus. Just around a bit now, closing to 11. So it's probably in around 18 degrees away from Venus just at the moment. And during that time, it fades through the rest of the month from -0.7 to -0.3. Dimming slightly. Venus, a magnificent sight at -4.6, is the first point of light that you'll see low. Now, when I mean low, it's low in the west as twilight fades, and it sets during twilight sooner every single day. So at the end of the month, it's just going to get a little bit dimmer and dimmer and then suddenly disappear. So it will appear in our morning skies again soon. And if you have a telescope on Venus as early as you can, preferably during late afternoon, in a clear blue sky, which we did have earlier on, strangely enough. It was, most of the day was a bit rainy, as we would call it, but good binoculars will also see it as well, steadily braced, of course. And if you have the, you have a 7x50s.
I do, and
yeah,
I have,
they have to be braced.
15x70s.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, the big ones, the 7x, whatever they are, they need to be. You get the wobble vision, and you get that seasickness.
They are a bit heavier and harder to keep steady.
Yeah, indeed.
But, that's where a little tripod will come in handy too.
Oh, yes, indeed. And I have one of those. So, Mars, +1.8, goes weakly above the upper left of Venus as twilight deepens. So it's disappearing rather quickly as well. So at the end of the month, it's going to disappear. Jupiter, -2.3. It rises around 1 a.m. in the morning, which is getting better and better. By the beginning of dawn, it shines high south and east, southeast. So just point yourself south and look a little bit to the left. Saturn, +0.8, it's very dim. It rises just about 11 p.m.-ish at the moment. It's at its highest in the south and the sharpest and steadiest in a telescope just before dawn begins. So if you're a morning person and you like to see sort of that nice bluey tinge of the morning rather than the dark of the night, that's the time to see it. Uranus and Neptune, 5.8 and 7.9 respectively, and beginning of dawn again. They're two difficult ones to see, and you have to know where you are.
Thank you, John. I just checked that International Space Station time tonight. Assuming we have clear skies here in Ireland, you will be able to see it from 10:58 p.m.
Yeah, yeah.
2 minutes before 11 until 4 minutes past 11. And as you said, John, maximum altitude 66 degrees above the horizon,
yeah,
and magnitude minus 3.8.
Yeah.
Very bright,
was
very
there,
light.
Was there a second pass or not?
There is another pass, yeah, at about half past one. Oh, not half past one.
Quarter to 12-ish, roughly.
On the 19th, yeah, just about half 12, 25 minutes to 1 tomorrow morning. Yeah, there was one earlier this morning, and that was this morning's time, yeah, 20 past 1 this morning.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. But just before 11 this evening, and if you're still up at 25 to 1, another pass.
I got a text from somebody last week.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at him here. 4 minutes to launch.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. We'll get to that in
we
a moment.
Will. Yeah, this is really exciting to watch this.
That's the Chandrayaan 3 Indian space moon launch mission. But while we stay with the stars and the planets for a moment, just the moon is, well, you'd be lucky to see it. It's a 1.2% waxing crescent moon. We had the new moon yesterday. But if you're up later this evening, just after sunset, you might catch a sliver of it before it sets at 10:45 this evening. It'll be a 1.5% waxing crescent moon. And if you can catch a 26-hour, not impossible to catch 26 hours after new moon. It will be due south of us at just before 3 a.m. tomorrow morning when it will have grown another little bit to just over 3%. And by the time it sets tomorrow morning at just after 11 a.m., it will be 4.5%. But the sun is rising, will rise tomorrow at 20 minutes past 5, which is 9 minutes later than a week ago, and it will cross the meridian from our point of view here in Dublin at 1:31 p.m., which is 1 minute later than a week ago. And the sun sets at 9:40 p.m. tomorrow evening, which is 8 minutes earlier than a week ago. And from then until just about 10:30, we'll have civil twilight. And from then, we'll have nautical twilight until 20 minutes to midnight or thereabouts. And then we'll have astronomical twilight all night until we go back into nautical twilight at about 3:30 the following morning. So no astronomical night tonight or tomorrow. In fact, no astronomical night until the 30th of July. So the dark skies coming back in another 2 weeks or so, just less than 2 weeks, when you should be able to view some of the dimmer constellations if you're out with your telescope, objects beyond the solar system. It'll be easier to see then. What does that mean? It means we'll have 17 minutes less daylight than a week ago tomorrow, where we'll have 2 minutes 38 seconds less daylight than today. And there'll be 16 hours and 20 minutes between sunrise and sunset. Oh, just by way of tomorrow, the 19th, is the Islamic New Year, 1445, begins. So happy New Year to all you involved there who follow the Islamic calendar. And Thursday, I don't know whether you mentioned it, John, Mars is 5 degrees to the left of the moon. Venus is a bit lower, but hard to catch though. And on Friday, Mars will be 7 degrees to the lower right of the moon. And on Saturday, the 22nd, the sun crosses into Cancer and Pluto will be at opposition in Sagittarius. And it's far away, nearly 34 astronomical units, nearly 34 times the distance of the sun to the Earth. That's how far away it'll be. That's very far away.
It's quite a distance.
It is.
If you're a meteor shower fan, like you and I would be, Delta Aquarids, they peak on July the 28th and 29th. That's the evening of the 28th, sort of midnight. It's a great time to catch them. And into the early hours of the morning of July the 29th. And you will catch them now because they're in our skies as from July the 12th, just gone past, and still in And around August the 23rd, so you will catch a few, but they will come in about 20 per hour, which is really nice to see. And sort of midnight to 3 a.m. in the morning here is a good time to watch those as well. It's not particularly high from where we are here in Ireland, but you may be able to still catch a few good ones, and we like catching good ones.
Indeed. So
put that in the date, it's the 28th and 29th of July coming.
Keep your head up. Now, we'll get back to that subject we mentioned before, which is the Chandrayaan 3 mission. We were watching it.
Yes.
Not together.
No.
At the same time, but yeah, in our respective work areas. And it launched about on Irish time. It was 10 past 10 last Friday morning. And quite
remarkable thing about it, and I noticed it, and you noticed it.
Indeed.
Is how quickly it takes off from the launch pad.
I was going to say it took off like a rocket, but it certainly did.
Usually there's a tiny delay in the way, you know, the Apollos, any of those ones, you get the 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then there's a slight delay while it ignites, and then it goes, oh, I think I'm going to lift off now. But this one.
No, there was, at the minute, the ignition just went
boom
and gone. Off it went.
Mm-hmm.
Like a rocket. I think it's because they're solid fuel. I'm not sure really what the reasoning is, but I say with the Ariane 5, for example, you see a lot of smoke or mostly steam actually, as it burns the liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, and there is a 1 or 2 second delay before the rocket actually, you see it lift off the pad, but this one was just ignite and gone. Yeah. And very impressive. Last I heard, everything was going as planned. Tickety-boo, indeed.
And there's
on the way to the moon. Did we mention it's going?
We were getting there, yes. Lunar South Pole is where it's going to land and should be there by August the 23rd or 24th. I'm not sure of the flight path of that one, because that is over and back, over and back, over and back.
Increasingly larger elliptical orbits around the Earth, and then at one point then it breaks away from the Earth and is captured by the moon's gravity. It's a more fuel-efficient way of doing it rather than firing straight for the moon. You can, as you would with a manned spacecraft. As you know, the Apollo craft took about 3 days or 3.5 days to get there, but, you know, you want to save. Well, you don't want to be on a spacecraft, a small little capsule, for too long.
No, you do not.
And So there's no great hurry from that point of view. There's nobody sitting on board waiting to get there. So you can do these long, slow loops, which is more fuel efficient. You can use slightly smaller rocket. It's a bit cheaper. And you eventually, as I say, you make larger and larger and more elliptical orbits around the Earth, and then you get caught by the moon's gravity, and then you get... then you go into orbit around the moon, and then slowly go into tighter and tighter, more circular orbits around the moon, and then it's going to drop its lander to the South Pole, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And it's there's a name. I actually have the place where it's going to land, which doesn't mean anything to me at all. So it's it was a very successful launch, and I'm sure there was a lot of nervous people as usual at the time of the launch, and it's going to sail until it enters the lunar orbit, a lander, and the lander is called Vikram. Now, I stayed a little while, about 35 minutes after the launch, just with it on in the background. So I'm just looking, I have a couple of screens on my desk so we could see it. But they were going back on the progress as they were building it. They were very quick to do this, but to edit it all together. But it's only a tiny little thing. So the lander itself is small, but the little six-wheeled mini rover is a tiny little thing. It really is. There wasn't much room inside the capsule at the top. So it's going to be remarkable to see how things progress on that. And this particular mission marks India's latest try to land on the moon on September the 6th, 2019, which seemed like only yesterday, where the Chandrayaan 2 spacecraft was destroyed during the final minutes of the lunar landing. About 1 mile above the surface, so there was a glitch, apparently caused the descent module to wander off course and to crash. So we're looking forward to that, And it's remarkable to see the pictures. As I said, I stayed about 35 minutes into the launch, and they had this little program made, ready to go, including the launch as well. So that was good to see. I'm sure you can probably still see that as well.
Thank you for that, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett, and our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Our usual texter, Alan's on. He has a clear signal in Kildare. It can be a bit dodgy in the Kildare area for some reason or other. Yeah. As far as I know, the transmitter, we bounced a signal from Smithfield, the studios here in Smithfield, out to the Three Rock transmitter in the Dublin Wicklow Mountains. And from there,
to the rest of the world.
To the rest of the universe. Mm-hmm. So I suppose, depending on where you are relative to Three Rock Mountain, as to how good your signal will be, and, of course, how far away you are from it. Yeah. You know, you got the signal in as far away as Moat once.
Yeah. It's as you can get things like that. You get a boost from something. And it just hooks along and just plays.
It depends on atmospheric conditions. Speaking of atmospheric conditions, just very briefly, I had a quick look at spaceweather.com today. There was, and some other website where, there, as you know, we're coming up to solar maximum and there's quite a lot of sunspots. And there was, apparently there was two separate sunspots. One, they were cannibalizing each other, and there was a massive coronal mass ejection yesterday or the day before. And some of that, billions and billions of tons of ionized material, is heading this way, and there's an aurora alert for this evening. I don't know how far from the poles, or how near to the poles, north to south pole, you'd need to be to see it. Of course, you'd need a clear sky as well, but that's something to look out for if you're up in clear skies of Donegal or Mayo. You may see something. Or, of course, the further north you are, the greater the chance, of course, you have of seeing aurora.
Most definitely, and they even say that the internet the technologies won't be affected by that much as well. Now, Virgin Galactic's next space flight will include some sweepstake winners.
Oh,
there we
I
go. It's including a mother and daughter duo from the Caribbean who won their tickets in a sweepstakes contest, as well as an 8-year-old former Olympian. Who was that?
So somebody who competed in the 1972 Munich Olympics. Their name escapes me now for the moment.
Yeah, sort of a sporty one this time. There's a health coach from Antigua and Barbuda called Keisha Shafaf, who won the contest and raised $1.7 million for non-profit Space for Humanity. So everybody seems to be getting a chance to get up there, and it'll be very exciting for those as well. So that is due to take off on August the 10th. So we'll keep an eye on it and just see how things go there.
Is that the first mother and daughter to be in to go to space? And the second eldest person to go, I think, into space. If I'm not sure. Well, I think William Shatner
was the first.
Was 90 years of age when he went.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
Who'd believe it?
He was so busy looking out the window, he forgot to take the seatbelt off and float around the place for a while. Hmm. And I think he was reminded, so he had a bit of fun on that as well. But I think he was just gobsmacked because, you know, there's no windows really in the Star Trek Enterprise, is there?
No, just a big screen.
There's a big screen.
Yes. And, you know, first time you saw it for real.
Yeah, do you know what I love about that particular program, and I always did, is the white noise you get in the background. Like that whirring noise. I don't know
if you've ever noticed.
On Star Trek, yeah. Yeah, it's just a whirr.
That's supposed to be the engines going. No,
it probably is. It doesn't matter what it is.
Or
vibrations to the hull or something like that. But if you haven't noticed them before, some people might find them annoying. I love it. Just that white noise, just a whirr.
Okay, never noticed.
Even on the newer Star Trek ones as well. So
okay,
instead of having absolute silence, they have this just little gentle hum.
All right. I suppose that makes sense. More real, I suppose, rather than a very...
I suppose, yeah.
Quiet.
But the other thing is, you see stars going past the windows if you're... can't... No.
She always had the doors open. We can't make the sound, but it was a... Psh, sort of a sound every time a door opened and closed.
Yeah, well, we've been scanning the skies for 60 years.
E.T. phoning home, perhaps. Yeah, we may even, years. There's a better chance of getting the receiving the call now, or if he is calling.
Yeah, well, we're trying to contact other people out there, or beings. And the SETI researchers have scanned the skies for almost 60 years, or even more than 60 years, in search of signals that look different from the typical radio emissions of stars and cataclysmic events such as supernovas, etc., which are all out there with a huge amount of different radio frequencies and things like that. So when ET calls, if he calls, can we be sure we're not being spoofed? So scientists seemingly have devised a new technique for finding and vetting possible radio signals from other civilizations in our galaxy. How would that work? I wonder would they be voices or different languages or what it is. We just don't know. So there's a major advance in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence that will significantly boost confidence in any future detection of alien life. Will that be something?
Yeah. Well, yeah. But they reckon they have a way now of determining whether a signal has come through interstellar space. Because of certain oscillations or interference with it, as opposed to some, when they do get signals. There has been signals received, some odd signals picked up, but of course, but they haven't been consistent, and it's always been put down to interference from signals here on Earth, just basically background signals from Dublin City FM, for example. But if you can determine that something has come through interstellar space, well, that's a different story entitled and altogether. They put it, the analogy they use is if you imagine, or not, you don't have to imagine, but if you've seen stars, especially low in the atmosphere, and they appear to twinkle, it's because of all that. Well, it's because of the atmosphere that the light has gone through and various perturbations in the atmosphere that cause what appears to be the star to twinkle. And that's partly because it's coming from a one-point source of light, whereas planets, which tend to be a disk, they don't appear, even when they're low down on the horizon, they don't appear to twinkle. So that's the kind of analogy they're using, whereas with this signal, if there's a bit of a twinkle in it, that's a sign that it's come through interstellar space, and perhaps so they know immediately whether it's a real signal or just interference, which is what mostly anything they've investigated up to now appears to have been. So kind of a more efficient way of searching. So if ET is out there, we now have a greater chance. That's if they're trying to contact us, and they mostly look at towards the center of the galaxy. Well, I suppose that's where the greatest population and density of stars are, and therefore planets, and therefore a greater possibility of, if there is some intelligent life out there, that that's where they would be.
Now, there's been a bit of a fun time in Australia on one of their beaches.
Oh, I saw the picture. Did you see the picture?
I did see it. I have it here in front of me, actually. And it's a bulky barnacle-encrusted cylinder, and it's baffled the authorities since washing up on a beach in Australia, with the country's space agency suggesting a day or two ago it could be debris from a foreign rocket launch. And the object, which measures about 2 meters, this is some canister really, isn't it? With cables dangling from the top, was recently spotted near the remote Durian Bay. It's a coastal region 2 hours drive north of state capital Perth, which is way over on this side of
the west,
And police have cordoned off the canister while it's tested, of course, for toxic material, and have shut down online speculation that could be linked to an aeroplane. There was one that crashed
in the Malaysian area. They've ruled that out.
Yeah, they have.
They came to the conclusion it can only have come from one place, and that's above, from space. So probably part of a first stage of a rocket launch. But generally, the people who... It's not uncommon for bits to fall off rockets. But generally speaking, they don't... Whoever launched them doesn't usually admit that it happens to aircraft apparently.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's another story, but the airlines are not, naturally enough, they're not quick to say, oh, that's a bit of that piece that fell off our flight yesterday to New York or something like that.
It doesn't look like a piece of an airplane. It's really like one of the rocket boosters in the end cap.
Yeah, it's a cylindrical object.
Fairly mangled. And how it managed to float onto the surface, because it would have turned upside down and filled up with water and disappeared, but I suppose with tidal currents and things like that it is. But anyway, no doubt we will hear what it belongs to soon. And just one more thing just before we go.
I was hoping to get the dark stars, but we don't think
so. It's a shame, because that it'll take a few more minutes to get through that one. But around and round it goes. The NASA probe has been revealing stunning moon views for over 15 years at this stage. How long will it last? This is the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, or LRO, that we know it as, and it's hard to believe it's up there 14 years. June 2009 is when it went in, and it's produced some fantastic images and data proven that have transformed our understanding of Earth's celestial neighbour, which is, of course, the Moon. So it's an ageing craft, still remains an assignment. I can't see it dropping off soon. And they can't give us any date as, you know, how long it might last. But I suppose they just keep it going until it collapses or runs out of something. But it began its fifth extended mission. And I love the word that they use, these extended missions. Put it up there for a day. See if it lasts longer than a day. And then it's up to its fifth extended mission in October 22. And they've gotten very clever to the LRO fuel management, which helps to keep it up there, so there'll be no in-flight fueling or refueling.
Thank you, John, for that indeed. Alan and Kildare, as he points out, the girls in green, as you know, the Irish soccer girls are off, he says. They kick off on the actual anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing, and he says, fittingly, when Canberra Deep Space Network dish provided some of the pictures back from the moon. So, well done, Alan, for spotting that. No better man. Thank you for that.
Our encyclopedia, Alanica. Well done,
indeed. Thank you very much. And thank you, John, for your news items. But that's all the time we have this evening. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks to James Sweeney, too, and to Conor Lennon for making this show available as a podcast on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, Bran Linnet with Threads. And at 11 p.m, Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe and his World Music Mix. And then from midnight to 2 a.m, we have Dave Barry with his mix of jazz, blues and soul with a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. And say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.